Just about every other minute, something else happens in this country, in the news cycle, that makes me say, what in the hell is going on? It's almost overwhelming, and I think that's by design. That's where we start in hour one of Drive Time with DeRussia. It's Jason, Dan is here. Susie is with us on the news. And we start with the feud and the battle over protests. Would you go to this military parade in Washington, D.C. this weekend? I don't think I would go. And I got to tell you, like, is sort of strange as it is in this country to have a giant military parade in Washington, D.C., celebrating the U.S. Army, seeing all the tanks. Like, objectively, it should be cool, right? It's objectively cool. But the events of the last couple days have me feeling nervous, uncomfortable, unsafe in a gathering like that. Not because I'm afraid of the military, but I am afraid that the Trump administration has decided that they give zero, you know. They are quashing all dissent and all protests. There's this sort of hatred of protest from President Donald Trump that I think should have all of us uneasy. And at first I was, I don't know, at first the events of L.A. for me brought back too much of what we experienced here in Minneapolis with the aftermath of the murder of George Floyd, the protests, the Third Precinct burning, the destruction of Uptown and parts of Lake Street. And my gut reaction was, you know what? I'm glad the president is sending the National Guard in. And now that I've had some time to see what's going on in Los Angeles, what's happening in Los Angeles, I don't think is anything like what we saw here in Minneapolis. What we're seeing is a president who hates protest. Well, hates certain kind of protests. I want to play you a little bit of what President Donald Trump said within the last couple of hours about his military parade. And, man, part of this country is protest. It just is. And I get it. Like, probably a lot of you guys don't really like protest. Protest makes people uneasy. I get it. It's uncomfortable. It's aggressive. It's loud. It's disruptive. I think people who don't like protests, like, have this idea that, well, why can't they just, like, get a permit and go to a park and, like, have a nice little day? And I think the reason is because none of us would pay any attention to that. That's why. So it's uncomfortable. That's what protest is. This crackdown on protest is far worse than anything legitimate protesters are talking about doing, because I think it has sort of this early chilling effect where it makes people like me say, like, I don't know if I want to go. I don't know if I want to go to a protest. I don't know if I would let my kids go to a protest right now, because here is your president talking about the military parade this weekend.
And we're going to be celebrating big on Saturday. We're going to have a lot of, and if there's any protester that wants to come out, they will be met with very big force. By the way, for those people that want to protest, they're going to be met with very big force. And I haven't even heard about a protest.
All right, hang on right there. He hasn't even heard about a protest, but he just wants to say right now, like, if anybody shows up in protest, he's going to, like, send out the tanks that are already there. Like, are the tanks in the parade going to just turn? Very big force. Like, oh. Do people like this? Is this what you guys wanted? I mean, this is This is ridiculous. So he hasn't even heard about any protests, but he's going to shut them down. And then, Dan, I don't know if you can pick it up from where we were playing, because right after that, then he says what I think. Then he shows his real hands here.
But, you know, this is people that hate our country, but they will be met with very heavy force.
January 6th was a day of love, I believe. But if you want to protest at the Happy Birthday Donald Trump military parade, as a cheap shot. Having a parade to celebrate the 250th anniversary of the Army, to me, I don't know, I'm fine with it. I'm not like super enthusiastic about it, but I'm fine with it. The idea that even the mental image that there might be a protest that you're going to be met with very big force, to me, it makes me want to say, screw you. This is the president of the United States. But this, I don't know if it gets more anti-democratic than that, more anti-American than saying, this is the president of the United States saying, I haven't even heard about any protests, but just so you know, if anybody's even thinking about it, you're going to be met with a massive show of force. Joy is in Hastings. Joy, you're first up on the CCO Talk and Text Line, 651-461-9226. This has me like a little more upset than I expected it to, Joy. You're on the air.
Well, you know, I'm not commenting on the president or that aspect. I'm just commenting on protests in general.
Okay.
I think that's the most asininical thing for people to do. It does nothing but piss other people off, get them thinking, and it's like, where is it going to get you in the end?
So you're questioning just the idea of a protest in general, or the way that it happens?
They should be outbanned throughout the whole flipping world.
Protest?
All it does is wreak havoc on everybody. And you know what? Don't people work anymore? I mean, where are these people? Go work. Get a job. Do something. Get a hobby. Quit wrecking the streets and everything. It is just awful. It really is.
Did you feel?
In my opinion.
Yeah. No, you know what? And I appreciate you saying that, Joy, because I don't think you're alone. I really don't. I think most people, and look, it's taken a bit for me to come to where I feel about this today, because my gut on this is the same. Like, what are we doing here? You're not really changing anybody's mind. But there's a reason the very First Amendment in the Constitution protects the right of people peaceably to assemble and to petition the government for a redress of grievances. It's right there for a reason. It's because, you know, this is sort of what got the show started. We took the tea and threw it in the ocean, right? Like, this sort of protest is sort of where it started. So I don't...
They're not doing it peaceful anymore, Jason. It is getting violent. Innocent people are getting hurt. And it's like, why would you even... I don't know. I think the whole idea should just be, it should just be banned.
Joy, I appreciate it. Thank you for listening and thank you for calling. I don't think what Joy is, I mean, I couldn't disagree with Joy any more strongly, but Joy is correct. I think that many of the protests that we see do end up in kind of a, I don't know, things escalate in a different way today than they maybe once did. But if you think about like what is really causing the escalation, and people have to be responsible for their own actions, right? So if you as a protester are wreaking havoc and vandalizing and whatever, I'm all for like arrest. I'm all for it. But I do think Donald Trump is getting what he wants, which is this idea. He's chilling protest and he's giving voice to the idea that I think a lot of people have that we just heard from Joyce. Let's go to Todd and Ramsey. Todd, you're on CCO. Thanks for listening. Go ahead, Todd.
Hi, Jason. You kind of stole my thunder a minute ago, but it's worth mentioning again. Is growing up, we were taught the Boston Tea Party was a tremendous patriotic event, and it was complete property destruction
right.
of a private corporation's assets, and we called them heroes. So,
what do you,
certainly a history of pro.
What do you think people would say today about the Boston Tea Party? The Joyces of the world and the Donald Trumps of the world.
Just what you're hearing now. They would say that it's completely wrong.
Right. How dare they?
Because they don't
How
agree
dare
with
they?
It. Because they don't agree with it.
That's what it is, yes. And I understand it. Like, I'm asking people to do a lot of work, right? To agree with something. It's sort of like the old days of the ACLU before they, I think, sort of lost their way to a certain degree. But the ACLU used to always about protecting and standing up for things that, you know, even they disagree with and that a lot of us would disagree with. That's what America is about. Like, I am for the, you can't be for January 6th and then mad about somebody protesting at the Donald Trump Army birthday parade. Give me a break.
Yes, you're exactly right. And the birthday parade is nothing more than that. Unfortunately, anyone who's long in the tooth at all has a picture in their mind of a military parade, and it's in places like Stalin in the Kremlin standing high above the troops as they march by, and Kim Jong-il standing above the missiles as they go below them. It's not a pleasant image in history, a military parade on a leader's birthday. It's just not. It's an ego trip.
Todd, thank you. That's Todd in Ramsey. Opens up a line for you at 651-461-9226. Lots of comments coming in on YouTube and on Facebook, where we are streaming live. We're on X as well. We're where you are, wherever you want to be. We want Drive Time there for you. You can subscribe to our YouTube channel and leave your comments during the commercial break. I'll read them when we come back. YouTube.com/WCCO Radio. Just click on live. We will continue with this conversation. A war on protests is what is happening. And it's exactly what Donald Trump wants. We'll continue the conversation here on CCO. All right, we've got a lot of callers who want to weigh in on this. On YouTube, UGEL pointing out that women's suffrage didn't just happen. Talking about protest. Tim says protest ended the Vietnam War. Yes, they are effective. There is a war going on against protest. And I think some texters are saying, no, Jason, you're missing the point. The war is against unlawful protest, violent protest. And that's why at first I felt like, you know what, sending the troops to L.A., I'd rather have the troops there early than late, as we saw here in the aftermath of the murder of George Floyd. I think the troops were here too late. But L.A. is not Minneapolis. Minneapolis at that time had 650 cops. L.A. has 17,000 law enforcement officers in Los Angeles County. It is different, and they didn't want it, and the police chief didn't want it. I believe it is a calculated moment where Donald Trump was ready to go because he said he was going to do this. And as I played the sound for you before, he does not like protest, period. He likes force. Lots of callers. Let's get right to the phones. Let's go to Bill in St. Paul. Bill, thanks for waiting through the break. Go ahead. You're on the air.
Yeah, thanks for taking the call earlier with Trish, because I think she teaches us why Donald Trump is able to get elected and why so many people back what he's saying, because they want to live a life of comfort. They're comfortable, and they're not the ones being affected by families being torn apart. They're not the ones that are walking out of immigration offices of people lawfully getting their immigration and then having it pulled away and ripped from them in front of their families' faces. Like, it's not hard to see how Donald Trump is quickly making more and more people undesirable. And as he makes more and more people undesirable, it's going to be easier for him to enact harms on those people. Hmm. And more people in the country, there's people in the country that don't care about that because they're comfortable.
Yeah. And I get it, Bill. Like, I think, look, I live in the suburbs. If I never had to engage on this topic or think about this topic, I can see where joy comes from, that you're like, hey, you know, this is just disruptive and it's an inconvenient. And the truth is, I think, unfortunately, for those like me who do believe in protest, too often these protests are escalating into violence, into vandalism, into torching cars and this sort of thing. And it does give more ammunition to the crowd that would rather never see a protest, period. I don't know what we do about that, where we, you know, if we could try to keep these things from escalating. I'm in favor of providing a little inconvenience. That's sort of the point of a protest. But the escalation, almost the predictable escalation, I don't know what we do about that.
I mean, I think in the end, we try to keep everybody safe. Yeah. Knowing that, yeah, like, property can be fixed and buildings can be replaced, and, you know, and it's unfortunate. And the last I want to see are people's hard-earned businesses be trashed. No, nobody wants to see that. But as long as people are able to be kept safe, all that stuff can be replaced and will be replaced. And, you know, and I'm with you. I want to make sure people are kept safe. And that's where I'm fearful of this, is because I don't think Donald Trump wants to keep people safe in these protests. I think he's ready to give the green light to hurt people.
Bill, thank you. Mark is on the way to Danbury, Wisconsin. Mark, you're on CCO. Go ahead.
Hey, first I want to say kudos to your show. I'm an old listener of WCCO's, the Cannon Mess, and you are carrying on an awesome tradition.
Oh, Mark, thank you. That means a ton. I really appreciate that.
Yeah, you know, Joy, I mean, she had her points. This last caller had his, and I've just been listening. It's just, you go back to, you know, Good Trouble, the protests of civil rights, and then I was just heard on the news about how South Korea's protests, you know, basically overturned martial law, got their president, he resigned, and he were impeached. So there's definitely a need for peaceful protests. I totally agree with the vandalism. You know what I'd like to see with those TV shots is I would like to see 10, 15 chairs brought out in a circle and maybe Karen Bass, maybe some civilians sit down and see if some protesters sit down and then just start have a conversation. You know, and, yeah, and the cameras can show that instead of having a line of people on this side and a line of people on that side. Why not just have a circle and let's talk about our issues? Because they're big issues, but you know,
they are, yeah,
a dialogue instead of a standoff.
And Mark, a lot of times this feels like theater to me, right? That the protesters know that, yeah, this line of police officers are going to show up and you kind of wait. I don't,
yeah,
know.
They're going to be sweating with their riot gear on and they're kind of like not wanting to be there because they want to go home and watch some T-ball practice or something.
Yes, exactly. Yeah, I mean, these are our neighbors, right? Like, that's exactly, yeah, right. Thanks, Mark. Like, the law enforcement, we talk about them like there's some sort of other world. These are our neighbors, too. So I want those guys to be safe. I don't know, man. Having the president threatening force to a protest that no one has even talked about having, I find it chilling. 3:31, we're going to break. We'll talk about this more. I appreciate all the calls and all the texts. In just a minute, Lisa Damith is going to join us because early this morning, the state legislature did pass a budget. What's in it? What's not in it? Who won? If that matters to you or not, I don't know. We'll talk about all of it coming up in just a minute. Well, they got it done. I was skeptical. I was skeptical. I thought somebody would go rogue on this over at the legislature, but in the early morning hours today, the Senate passed what the House had passed through. There is a new $66 billion budget. No one's really happy, which is sort of what you expect at the end of a budget process. Well, let's see what the Speaker of the House has to say. Representative Lisa Damith is with us on the John Schuster Coldwell Banker Hotline. Are you, well, first of all, did you get a nap or something? You guys wrapped up pretty late slash early today.
Good afternoon, Jason. Great to talk with you. And yeah, I got about a 10 or a 15 minute nap this afternoon. The House actually, we finished our work just before 11. Last night, the Senate was in a little longer. So maybe I got a head start on a sleep, oh, yeah, a little bit of sleep last night. But, you know, you talk about, you know, no one's really happy. I think when we look at the process, and you and I can talk about that, but the unique makeup of what has happened over this legislative session. So many historic things. The fact that we got this done, yes, a little bit late, but we prevented a government shutdown. We were able to work together, and we delivered the largest spending cut from biennium to biennium, protecting Minnesota families and their pocketbooks. We have a lot of work that we were able to accomplish.
You know, this the almost evenly split House of Representatives, what, 67-66 is sort of where it was at?
Well, in the House, we were exactly tied.
No, you were tied, right.
67-67.
That's right.
And then the Democrats had it by one. They had the majority by just one in the Senate. And as you know, this fluctuated throughout the year with, you know, a special election and multiple things this year.
When you look at what got done and what's in this package, what do you think was the biggest win, not for Republicans, but what was the biggest win for Minnesotans in this?
I think protecting Minnesotans and their the expenses that they've faced. When you look over the last biennium, so the last 2 years, we had that $18 billion surplus that everyone was talking about. It was not returned to the taxpayers in a meaningful way. And then they increased the state budget, and that was the Democrats when they had the full trifecta. They increased the state budget by another $10 billion. So when we came in this year, that was one of the top things that was talked about. Let's just raise revenue. That translates into let's tax Minnesotans more. I think the biggest win for Minnesotans is the fact that with Republicans in a tie and the close margins, we were able to work out a negotiation that prevented it prevented an expansion of sales tax. It prevented a fifth-tier income tax. It did a number of other things while still providing extra funding for our school districts, making sure that those that need, there's disability services and other things, that the core responsibility for government and making sure that our public safety is also funded, those things still maintained, even while reducing some of the excess wasteful spending we've seen in the state over the last number of years.
You know, when you look at that tight breakdown and the fact that Republicans had leverage, I wonder if you're a big time sort of a Republican who wants to cut the size of government even more. You know, the Democrats did keep most of the things that they achieved during the trifecta. They did keep, school funding and unemployment insurance for the hourly school workers and the paid family and medical leave program. A lot of other than allowing undocumented immigrants as adults to be on MinnesotaCare, the insurance program, was there anything else that you really rolled back that the trifecta got through? I'm not sure there is.
Yeah, there is, Jason. And I think that's an important fact that I believe with Republicans in the tie and having a voice in this process, it almost provided an opportunity for Democrats where they maybe had some overreach to say, we may not like it, but maybe we need to compromise. So on earned and safe time, we were able to get some safeguards in the reporting process. Paid family medical leave, we wanted to make more meaningful changes because of what we've heard from the business community across the state, that program that is already behind in funding, and yet it hasn't even rolled out yet. And the IT system to make that actually work is not even ready, yet it's supposed to start January 1st. We were able to just roll back the tax on that on employers. We were able to roll that back just a small amount. We couldn't get some of the other things done that we wanted to do. We were also, for school districts, able to put in some safeguards around that unemployment for hourly workers. It's important to recognize that those hourly workers in schools are not unemployed, but yet they have jobs that finish during the summer. So we were able to get some language working with the DEED, so the Department of Employment and Economic Development, and the Department of Education, putting some safeguards there so people aren't just taking the summers off and getting paid. They're either looking for jobs or taking the jobs that schools are able to offer them. There were a number of other things. You mentioned the health insurance for undocumented people. We were able to stop that as of January 1st for 18 and over, just adults. We did maintain covering children. That is not taking away health care. It's making it so taxpayers are not on the hook for paying for health insurance for the undocumented population. So without Republicans at the table, the things that I've mentioned there would never have happened. The immediate response from Democrats going into negotiations was, let's raise revenue. Let's just raise our taxes. And we were able to prevent that.
Well, there is a tax increase on cannabis, right? It was going to be 10% when that finally goes, recreational cannabis goes on sale. And now it's going to be 15%. Yeah. And there are some increases in EV fees as well, right?
Yes, there are some.
Those don't count, Lisa? Come on. Those sound like tax increases to me.
They do. Some of, you know, there are some fees there. And what I'll say about that cannabis tax, at 10%, out of the states in the country that have legalized cannabis, we were on the very low end. And so by moving that up to 15%, you know, the cannabis program, when it was made legal in 2023, that has still not had a very good rollout. It was pushed through. And I think the tax being a little bit lower in the beginning was difficult. But again, these things don't hit Minnesota families across the board. And I think that's an important thing to realize, because all of us, you, me, everybody, we face that 10% or that $10 billion increase over on state government over the last 2 years. So we were able to do some very good things for the people of Minnesota.
Lisa Damith, representative, speaker of the House, is with us. So the governor, in a statement just, I don't know, a couple of hours ago, said this: against the backdrop of partisan dysfunction in Washington, Minnesota is proving that we can still come together and get things done for the people we serve. With the most closely divided legislature in the country, we passed the largest reduction in state spending in state history and protected the things that make Minnesota the best state in the country to raise a child. I applaud the legislators who work late into the night to get this done. Do you agree?
I do agree. We did some very good things for Minnesota. Now, Jason, we were supposed to have had our work done by May 19th, and we did pass some of our bills by May 19th, our deadline. We passed public safety and judiciary, the agriculture bill, a housing bill, veterans, and the state government bill. But we proved that we could work together. It just took longer to get these things done. And remember, in the House, Democrats stayed out of work. They boycotted work for 23 days because they were down one seat, because the person that won in Roseville, their candidate that won, didn't live in the district, and it forced a special election, which took place later. And so even with those dynamics, a one-seat advantage for Republicans, but still only 67, Democrats staying out, then returning to a tie, we were able to get this done. No government shutdown, and we served Minnesotans much better with the reduction in spending in our state government.
You don't really think that if they started at the beginning, that you would have had this done without a special session anyway, do you? I mean, it seems like the mechanics, the way this all works now, is that this is sort of what you can expect.
I think when we look at the delayed start and the pushback there, one of the things that really played into us being able to work together was the fact that we had, when returned to a tie, we had co-chairs in every one of the committees and equal membership. So each one of our committees in the House had to start working together sooner. I think it took my Democrat colleagues longer to come to the realization that they no longer had a trifecta. And with me as the speaker, as a Republican, and a Republican tie in the House, they were going to have to both agree and listen to some of the things. And we had negotiating power, small, but we had negotiating power in the room. Yeah. I think that took them a little longer to come to terms with that.
Are you going to run for governor?
I am so glad that I am done with this session. As my first session being Speaker of the House, I am not making any determinations going forward at all at this point, Jason.
Are you thinking about it? I mean, there's been really quite a bit of praise for the way you've navigated very difficult situations at the legislature, the way you've been a spokesperson for Republicans. You would be like a normal Republican running for governor, Representative Daly.
I'll take that as a compliment. You know, the whole motivation that I have had in even running for the legislature, I was on my school board before, is just looking at my community and thinking of, if I have something to offer, how could I help my community take, you know, the knowledge that I have and the ability to work together. That's what drove me on the school board. That's what's driven my opportunities here in the legislature. I would never say no to running for governor. I'm not telling you yes, so be very clear about that. I would never say no, because if you would have asked me just a few years ago if I ever thought I'd be Speaker of the House, I would not have even thought of that. And so I'm not going to say no to you, but I'm definitely not saying yes either. I have been honored to serve as Speaker of the House and as a legislature in the legislature for my constituents here in District 13A. It is an honor of a lifetime, and I'm so grateful for this opportunity.
All right. You got to come and tell me first, though, when you decide. That's the deal. That's the deal. Representative Lisa David, always appreciate having you on. Thanks for being here.
Thank you very much, and congratulations to your newest graduate.
Ah, yes. It's amazing. It's pretty fun. I don't know what's a bigger achievement, getting a kid out of your house and graduating high school or navigating the session. Equal, many challenges.
Hey, challenges, but you have the opportunity to really influence the people that grow up in your house and then go out on their own. I've got four kids, and I'm so grateful for the opportunity that I've had. So I think that is, by far, family is the most important.
No doubt. You know it well. Thanks, Lisa. Representative Lisa Damus, Speaker of the House. We're late. We'll take a break and be right back. Boy, what a night to go to the Twins game, right? Absolutely beautiful weather in downtown Minneapolis. Twins have a 6:40 start at Target Field. Why do they start before 7? What is that? What's the 6:40 start?
I believe the initial idea was earlier starts when you're talking about kids still being in school. Obviously, most kids are out of school at this point. But then they found when they started doing that, people actually liked the earlier start because it gets them done and they can go out and do other things after the game if they want.
Come have happy hour at Target Field.
Friday nights are still usually 7 o'clock starts, but the weeknight games, they go with the 6:40.
6 o'clock pregame right here on CCO. By the way, today we're giving away Twins tickets. It's Twins Ticket Tuesday. So when you hear the Win Twins sounder,
not now,
be caller number 3, and we're giving away a 4-pack for Monday, June 23rd against the Seattle Mariners, 6:40. That should be pretty good. 4-game series with the Seattle starting on Monday. So twins.com/tickets. But we'll give them away at some time in the next hour. We want you to keep listening. Ask Adrian advice coming your way next.